2012 derecho leave you in the dark. WTOP goes in depth on the issues that affect you.
I'm scared to death that something's going to happen to me.
There was a tree wrapped in wires, and we called like 3 times, and each time they didn't know about it.
The information is not accurate, and it's inconsistent.
It's Ask the Utility Execs, your chance to talk directly with the heads of our local power companies. Now, your hosts for this special Hour of Power, Mark Seagraves and Mark Lewis.
We thank you for joining us to be a part of this special broadcast. You can call us now at 877-336-1035. Now, I have to warn you, there's going to be a lot of people calling in this morning, so please be patient as you call in and try to keep your questions as short and to the point as possible. The number again is 877-336-1035. We want to get as many as you on as we can during this hour. You can also email us at WTOP.com. We're taking questions at WTOP's Facebook page as well, and on Twitter using the hashtag WTOPTalkback. Now, here's Mark Seagraves.
Well, I want to thank everybody for coming in. We have Tom Dennison with SMECO, and we have Jim Faycolt with Potomac Edison. They are in studio with us today. And by phone from BGE, we have Bob Gould from Pepco. We have Tom Graham, Dominion Power, Rodney Blevins, Novec, Stan Furberg, and from Rappahannock, David Kugler. Gentlemen, I want to thank you all for making time for this. And we're not going to rehash the misery that everybody went through for a week without power. We've all heard that story. We want to look to the forward, see what can be done to mitigate these the misery in the future, and what's being done to improve our system. So let me start first here in the studio with Mr. Faycolt. You're the president of Maryland Operations for Potomac Edison. How would you rate your performance through this?
Well, first of all, Mark, let me thank you for letting us join you to talk about it. And I also wanted to thank our customers for their patience. We appreciate that. We understand the inconvenience associated. You know, I think, from the standpoint of our performance, we serve 250,000 customers. We had just a little over 65,000 affected. We had about 93-94% restored by Tuesday. You know, there's a lot of different ways you look at, how you perform in a storm. First of all, from a safety standpoint, that's the most important thing that, we work through. We did very, very well there. We think from the standpoint of getting our customers back online, we did very well. You know, always room for improvement, but I think by and large, getting the vast majority of our customers on by Tuesday into Wednesday, we did have a few customers that were still out into Thursday in our hardest hit areas. So that's kind of a brief summary for Potomac Edison.
Thomas Graham, you're on the phone with President of Pepco. let me put the same question to you. How would you rate your performance through this storm?
Well, first of all, good morning to everyone. I would have to rate it with respect to when you look at the number of customers we had out of service. We had about 443,000 customers out of service of the 790,000 that we serve. You know, I fully understand and can appreciate from the customer's perspective that being out of service for, in some cases, over a week is not an acceptable situation. But I would say that, we responded quickly. We do a lot of drills. We work with our partners and the emergency management agencies. Initially, we are looking to restore service to the vast majority of our customers by Friday. We were able to come in 2 days earlier than that initial prediction, but there was an extraordinarily amount of damage to our system. So with respect to effort and organizing that workforce, we had about 3,000 personnel working on the restoration of service. Certainly I feel comfortable with that, but, we will continue to look at our response, look at communication, look at mutual assistance, and look at options in the future to make it a better experience for our customers.
We're going to take a break for traffic and weather, and then we're going to come back with your questions for the utility executives.
The aftermath of the 2012 derecho. It's a special edition of Ask the Utility Execs on WTOP. Now back to your hosts, Mark C. Graves and Mark Lewis.
We'll be taking your phone calls throughout this special hour. The number is 877-336-1035. Lots of folks want to get in, so we ask for your patience in calling in. 877-336-1035. Please keep your questions short and direct for the utility executives. You can also email a question at WTOP.com. Send one in on Twitter as well. Use the hashtag WTOPTalkback.
And let's get one of our callers in here. Deanna called with this question. She's a Maryland resident.
I want to know why PGE does not constantly cut these trees down in the southern end of their power grid. They're always laying on the trees, even when there's no storm. And when the storms come, the power goes out. Long time. They need to be buried, or the trees need to be trimmed back way, way, way back. What are they going to do about it?
And I know this is a regional question, so I want to get to everybody quickly, but Robert Gould from BGE, she's one of your customers. What do you say to her?
No, happy to answer that. So we have been aggressively trimming throughout the entire territory. There are also new regulations that went into effect on June 1 that actually give us the ability to be more aggressive in our trimming. That was something the Maryland Public Service Commission pressed forward with. So we just began that process on June 1st. Now, what I would say is this. For every person that wants us to trim trees, we bump up against others who do not want us to trim trees. And where the trees are off of our right-of-way, which you don't have to go very far to have that happen, we have to get permission to either take out trees or to cut trees, and we try to get that by working closely with our customers. But the problem is that, again, there are places where customers simply do not want us to do any work on their respective trees. And as we saw with the trees that came down, these weren't just tree limbs. These were whole trees that fell, you know, anywhere of, you know, 50, 60, 70 feet in height falling onto the lines. So these trees would clearly have been off the right-of-way. And that's the same problem we faced in Irene. So it is a really important issue. Hopefully this will heighten the sensitivity with our customers and give us a little bit more ability to effect some of the trimming that is absolutely necessary. And I would tell you, over the past 10 years, we've not cut back on our trimming budget. We have increased our trimming budgets.
Tom Dennison with SMECO, let me ask you about that. What's your trimming budget? Do you run into the same problem, first of all, with customers who don't want you to trim their trees? And then what do you spend on tree trimming?
I can get you that number, Mark, but what I can tell you is that we, too, have a very aggressive tree trimming program, and I think if you talk to our customers, to our customer members in Southern Maryland, you would hear that. And I think because of that aggressive plan that we have, those budgets that have increased time and time again, we have done very well in terms of our reliability, and I think it shows through in the incidents that we see, and then certainly in this last storm where we had 60-some thousand customers out, which is 40% of our customer base, that we were able to restore power very quickly and have our 90% customers back on, over 90% by Monday night.
Rodney Blevin for Dominion Power. What about your tree trimming? Are you have the same staffing levels that you had in the past and the same budget for tree trimming?
We've stepped it up significantly. We have a robust tree trimming program. In fact, we spend about 2.5 times today more than what we did 10 years ago.
On tree trimming. How about Mr. Graham for Pepco? What about your budget and your staffing levels?
You know, our budget for tree trimming is probably somewhere, and subject to check, somewhere between 20 to 30 million. You know, over the last couple of years associated with our reliability improvement plan, you know, we've committed, we've probably trimmed about 4,000 miles of tree line. But I'd have to tell you that, you know, a lot of the communities that I visited last week, you know, you're looking at trees. I was trying to get some perspective with, regards to our utility poles, which may be about 40 to 50 feet. And these trees, I would say, were 2 to 3 times taller than those poles. So, you know, tree trimming is one thing, but when you see trees of that size topple on homes and cars and our infrastructure, it's a different conversation.
Mr. Graham, a local reporter, I believe, tried to ask you a question about staffing levels compared to the past couple of years. Are your staffing levels for road crews and maintenance crews being increased, or how do they compare to the past couple of years?
You know, the staffing levels, you know, again, subject to check, but, you know, we enhance our internal resources with contractors. And to be honest, that's been very helpful for us during Hurricane Irene, where we had a lot of resources on the property that were doing reliability work, you know, a $910 million project that we have over the next 5 years to improve service for our customers. So, you know, from day one, you know, we would be in a better position with the combination of our existing workforce and the contractors that we have on the property already.
But do you have, I guess I'm trying to get you, are you employing the same number of linemen and maintenance people that you were years ago, or is this stuff that you're, sounds like you're kind of contracting some of this out?
The combination of the two would be more.
Would be more. Yeah. And Stan Furberg, you're with Novec. How about you? What are you doing as far as budget and staffing levels? How do they compare?
Well, good morning, and thanks for the opportunity to participate again. Good to be with you again. We have about 149,000 customers in six counties in Northern Virginia. The storm took out roughly 40,000 of those customers, and we had all but five of them back on by Wednesday, July 4th. And the five that remained in Fauquier County, we got those on early Thursday. With regard to our budget on tree trimming, last year we spent in excess of $5 million on trimming. We learned a hard lesson from that ice storm in January of 2011 that we needed to get more aggressive with trees outside the rights of way, exactly what Tom Graham has been talking about. When you've got trees that you know are 70, 80, 90 feet tall and weigh literally thousands of pounds, you can't build a system robust enough to withstand the impact from those kinds of things. And so between that storm and Hurricane Irene and this storm, we became much more aggressive. But as a result, by the mere fact that we got so many customers on so quickly, I think we handled it quite well.
Are you saying that it's just impossible to prepare for these kinds of storms?
Well, this was a storm of, you know, a magnitude that was greater than anything we had seen of its nature. The last time I saw a storm that was similar to this was in June of 2008, and its intensity was not quite that of this storm. You know, in just a matter of 30 minutes, we went from zero out on our system to 40,000. And, you know, I was out in the field with some of our crews last week up in Loudoun County and saw the damage, and it was as extensive as anything I've seen in my career. I grew up in the Midwest where tornadoes often cause, you know, devastating damage, and I would put this on par with anything that I've seen in my 30-plus years in the industry.
We're going to take a break. More of your questions for the utility executives right after this.
Now that the lights are back on, it's your chance to grade our local utilities. It's Ask the Utility Execs on WTOP. Now back to Mark Seagraves and Mark Lewis.
Here's the phone number to get on the show, 877-336-1035. Please be patient and hold on. We will try to get to as many phone calls as we can. 877-336-1035. You can email us at WTOP.com. We're also taking questions on our Facebook page or by Twitter. Use the hashtag WTOP Talkback.
Let's get another caller in here. We have this question from Gutmila.
I live with my mother-in-law, who's 95. I suffer from multiple sclerosis, and I am handicapped. I want to ask the executives why they don't have a special needs program for those who suffer from disabilities.
Dave Kugler with Rappahannock, what about that? Is there a special program for people with disabilities who might be more dependent on power than others?
Thanks for having us on the call today. There is a program that's been set up by the Virginia State Corporation Commission for people with special medical needs. It's a uniform process that's available to all electric utilities and their members. And if they notify us and fill out certain standard forms, then they go on a special list and they're given notification. They're not given priority for service restoration, but we made a special effort to notify them of storms that are impending and also the restoration. We give them daily updates on our progress.
Robert Gould in Maryland, is there a similar program?
Yeah, there is definitely. We have a special needs program, and we did actually during the event, we actually put out multiple robocalls to that list of special needs customers. But I think what's important to understand is that feeders, when you're restoring power, don't know the difference between special needs or don't know the difference between businesses and residential customers. And what we try to do is bring the most customers back on as quickly as possible. And that's why we go about our restoration priority where you hit the public safety entities first and then go after the larger blocks of customers. If we were if at the time of a storm we were working to deal with individual special needs customers, we would really have an elongated process of restoration. And that's not to diminish the question. That's not to diminish the issue. But what we try to do with the approach of summer and then also with winter, each of the seasons, we try to make sure that we're working closely with local jurisdictions, human resource organizations, to try and help get the word out that customers who are in those situations should have plans in place such that if they are dependent upon electricity for their medical needs, they have a backup plan. They have some other care plan that they can put into practice or place. If not, them working with local human resource agencies. But it is a definite challenge. But at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is bring on the most amount of customers as quickly as possible without getting into individual appeals, because that can terribly slow up the process.
Let me ask Jim Faycolt from Potomac Edison. Maryland residents are going to see an additional fee in their bill because of this storm, the bill stabilization adjustment. Is that correct?
I'm not real familiar with that, but they're typically you would go, you know, with the following the storm and get your costs recovered through the commission. So you would have to go to the commission.
No, I'm talking about customers will see an additional fee on their bill that you get a storm adjustment fee. The Public Service Commission of Maryland allows you to charge that to your customers. Is that correct?
Correct.
So what will that be? How much will that be? And why should people pay you a fee when their power is off?
Well, you know, first of all, as I said, we don't have total costs of restoration yet calculated from the storm. And then at that point, we'll determine, you know, what that will be, Mark. But, you know, we're still calculating total costs at the end of this event.
But again, what's the rationalization that my power, I'm your customer, you didn't provide me the service for up to several days in some cases, but now I'm going to get a fee added to my bill to make you whole?
Well, you know, there's a lot of damage to the system. There's a lot of poles and wires to put back up in the total restoration of the process. And that's a shared, you know, shared cost across all customers, Mark.
And they don't have this.
Graham, can I jump in for a sec?
I'm sorry, who is this?
This is Tom Graham.
Tom Graham with Pepco. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, the billing stabilization, you know, it really came about, billing stabilization, BSA, it really came about when the utilities got out of the generation business and really were to encourage them to be supportive of energy efficiency. So within that billing stabilization, you know, for instance, in the Maryland service territory, for the the billing stabilization does apply for the first 24 hours, and then beyond that, it does not apply. But originally, the billing stabilization was put into play to kind of make utilities whole for participating and encouraging energy efficiency.
But again, I mean, and maybe Mr. Gould from BGE wants to weigh in on this because you're in Maryland as well. I'm a customer. You didn't provide my services, but you're going to assess me a fee to make you whole. I just think people are listening to this and saying that just doesn't make sense. How can you justify that?
No, I understand. And similar to what Mr. Graham just said, this is all part of, you have to step back and look at the entire process. And utilities were looked to help promote energy efficiency in the state of Maryland. And the Public Service Commission went through its process. And again, what they decided was is that the first 24 hours you can collect, but beyond that you cannot. And they were trying to find the balance between the customer's interest and also the interest of the utility. And, you know, when you look at the fact that we reinvest heavily back into the system, the dollars that we do bring in as a result of multiple channels, it was believed that this was the right public policy decision.
And how much can you give kind of a ballpark? How much would somebody see? And will it be a line item? Will they actually see it on their bill, or will it be hidden in amidst some other fees?
No, I can only speak for BGE. The way I understand it would happen is that for BGE, there would be a line item that's consistent, and then you would see a credit that would be applied for the time period that each individual customer was out. And it's going to vary because there's some algorithm that's applied to it. But at the end of the day, it's going to be very transparent on the bill, as transparent as you can be on a utility bill. And as Mr. Graham said, it's only the first 24 hours that the utility is even entitled to collect. After that, it is not something that we are able to collect.
Are we talking about a de minimis amount, a dollar for each customer? Are we talking about $100?
Yeah, I don't have the total numbers. It's based on the total counts at a given time. It is, I mean, certainly anything that I would say is not going to be de minimis to a customer. Anything more than what they would be willing to pay at that time would be, you know, a concern. But we've not figured that out. And I will tell you, the reason is we're still in a restoration mode, believe it or not. We're still dealing with issues related to the storm. And then we're also preparing a storm report, a major storm report that will go to the Public Service Commission as well as the other utilities that will form the basis for their review. And I think it's important to understand that right now there's a lot of emotion. There's a lot of frustration riding still. Once we get clear of this storm, the Public Service Commission is the proper forum. They will go through and evaluate all of the issues that are being discussed today in a non-emotional, very fact-based fashion. And once that occurs, that's when, if you will, the grade of how the utilities performed and what can be done better the next time, what worked well and what could be a challenge in the future will be addressed.
Bob Gould, we appreciate that. We have more questions and answers from the utility executives after a look at traffic and weather on the 8th.
The aftermath of the 2012 derecho. It's a special edition of Ask the Utility Execs on WTOP. Now back to your hosts, Mark Seagraves and Mark Lewis.
We'll be taking more of your phone calls at 877-336-1035. The number again is 877-336-1035. Phone lines are jammed, so please be patient if you're trying to get through. You can email a question at WTOP.com. You can send in one on our Facebook page. You can also send in one on Twitter. The hashtag is WTOP Talkback. Mark?
Let's get right to the phones. We have Mark calling, and he has a question for Tom Graham and Pepco. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, Pepco has an automated system. The consumer can punch in their phone number, and they'll call them back when the power's back on. Yet when Pepco calls the customer back, gives them three options. One, push one if the power's back on. Push two if the lights are flickering. Push three if you still don't have power. If the consumer knew that answer, they wouldn't need Pepco to call you back. How does that make sense?
Mr. Graham.
Thank you for the question. You know, we provide the options for customers to call us back, and it's important as we go through this whole restoration process. And the reason it's important is something that we would term a nested outage. And if we could start, let's say, at the substation level, you know, during the restoration process, we're working on restoring service there because the substation, you know, may provide service to about 10,000 or so customers, and we had damage to the supply feeds going into the substations. The substations were structurally fine to about, there were 21 subs that were impacted. So as we move down the line and we move on to main feeders and we look at damage and then we get into the neighborhoods where it may not be obvious, it may be a transformer, it may be a fuse, it may not be the tree that you saw on the wire initially. And when we do that repair, we thought we had restored service to all customers. So we do the callback to let you know that, you know, we've restored the service. We've worked in your area. We've restored what we've seen. But if you're still out of service, we would like you to call us back because at that point we know there's a deeper issue that we have to address. Now, in the future, you know, what I'm very optimistic about is our implementation of AMI or advanced meter infrastructure on the smart meters that are going in. We're about 97% done in the District of Columbia, 88% or so of those meters are activated. And then in Maryland, we've really just got started in that process, but we'll complete the meter exchange this year, and in the second quarter of next year, those meters will be activated. And the reason that's important for a customer is then we would have the ability ping the system, and those meters that don't respond, then we would know that at that particular household, that particular business, there is another issue that we're not aware of. So part of our messaging very early on and throughout the event is we need our customers to call 1-877-PEPCO-62 to let us know there's an outage and continue to use that and report it through the app that we've now applied that you can get from the App Store or from our website, and also report those outages on the website. So, you know, in the future, you know, we'll be able to do a better job at outage detection analysis which should minimize the amount of times that we have to send a truck to a location and that customer is actually in service. We're able to use this technology in our Delaware territory, and we're able to save about 600 truck rolls.
Mr. Graham, let me ask you, because one of the things, and it's not just related to Pepco, but one of the things that I heard as I traveled around the communities talking to people who were sitting in their homes without electricity, is that the thing that frustrated them most was the breakdown in communications between the power companies and the customers. And this was a problem that was in the past. This is not a new problem. But what they said, particularly with Pepco, was they continued to get conflicting information. They'd go online and they'd see crew assigned, crew en route, and then they'd check back online and it would be, you know, it had reverted back to case pending, or they would call and get conflicting information when they actually were able to get somebody on the phone. So what do you say to those people who were just so frustrated with the breakdown in communication?
I can appreciate that, you know, and we continue to evaluate how we communicate with our customers during major events, but it really does speak to the issue that I just described, is that, you know, for instance, a crew may be en route, but there may be four crews that have to work on that particular location. You know, there are locations that I went to, let's say in Potomac, and you would have a crew of 40 to 50 people that had been working on a particular site for 3 days. So, you know, the information that's in the website, it's not, you know, it is in real time. You know, we're continuing to try to refine that process. But we provide as many mechanisms to communicate with us as possible. We've doubled phone lines. We've brought in more customer service representatives. We have probably 275 individuals in the company who also try to answer the phones. But it is something that we're going to take a look at. And, you know, we're always going to try to get better.
Rodney Blevin with Dominion, how would you rate your communication, just that segment of this problem that we went through? How do you communicate with your customers?
Mark, thank you. I'll tell you, we learned a great deal during Hurricane Irene in 2011. And a lot of the improvements that we put in place played out well for us in one regard. After Irene, we had problems with our estimated restoration times. Frankly, in our desire to provide customers with more information, we were providing customers with bad information, and we got very strong feedback from our customers that wasn't okay. So I feel like we made improvements there. Now, I don't mean to misrepresent. It's never enough, and we're going to continue to work in the future providing more personal information on estimated restoration times. Now, specifically on this subject of the callbacks, it's one of the immediate action items that's going to come out of this restoration effort. We won't even have to wait to get into the formal critique that we'll do working with a number of folks to realize that we need to do some work there. For instance, the script that we use to do the callbacks, what our customers heard is we were telling them their lights were back on. Now, that's not what necessarily the script, if you read through it, but that's what our customers heard, and we definitely need to address the way that we confirm the way our customers' lights are back on.
So the people who are calling back, they're just reading from a script rather than actually individual personalized information?
It's an automated call to check if the customer's lights were back on. And frankly, the script was confusing to customers, and that's our problem, and we're going to fix it.
We're going to take another break. When we get back, we're going to talk about what everybody's been talking about, burying the power lines.
Now that the lights are back on, it's your chance to grade our local utilities. It's Ask the Utility Execs on WTOP. Now back to Mark Seagraves and Mark Lewis.
You can ask the execs now at 877-336-1035, 877-336-1035. Email your question at WTOP.com, or you can send it in via Twitter, the hashtag WTOPTalkback. Also join the discussion on our Facebook page. Once again, WTOP's Mark Seagraves.
And let's go right back to the phones. Erin, you're on. Go ahead.
Good morning. I just wanted to, my question is for Mr. Graham with Pepco. I'm a Pepco customer in Potomac, and I, you know, did not have power for 5 days. I do want to say, starting off the bat, that, you know, I do commend the efforts. I know that it was hard for the utility crews to work in the heat, and, you know, I completely understand that, and I do appreciate all your efforts, and I know it was a mass effort. So I do want to start by saying that, but my question is for my area, specifically in Potomac, where we have extremely tall trees, And I know, obviously, this is an issue that you had mentioned earlier, that, you know, something like this is going to happen again, of course. So what can be done in terms of areas such as Potomac and elsewhere where we do have really tall trees is, can we consider burying power lines in those areas? Or can we, what other efforts, you know, are you going to try to put forth with regards to, you know, areas or issues like this?
Tom Graham with PEPCO.
Okay, thank you very much for the question. Yeah, for the last 2 years, we've been working on our reliability enhancement plan. And as I mentioned earlier, that's about a $910 million investment to improve service for our customers. Part of that included selective undergrounding. There are other components, you know, replacement of the underground cable. We've replaced several hundred miles of underground cable. We've trimmed 4,000 miles of tree line thus far. We have identified a couple locations in Maryland and also a couple locations in the district. There have been studies that have looked at undergrounding as a whole. You know, for instance, in the District of Columbia, you know, that number is about, to underground the lines, is about $5.8 billion to underground lines in the district. The district is the smaller of our two territories.
So let me ask you, Mr. Graham, if you got a price tag, $6 billion, I'm sure it would take years and cause a lot of roads to be torn up. Why not just bite the bullet and do it?
Well, you know, I think that's going to be the discussion in Maryland and the District of Columbia.
Well, who gets to make that decision? Is that a decision that PEPCO executives make, or is that a decision that customers get to make?
That's a decision that we will work with the public service commissions in the respective jurisdictions on.
And do you have the telephone poles? Do you make money off of those by leasing space to Comcast and others?
There are attachment fees, yes.
And so is that an incentive for you not to bury the power lines?
No, not at all. Our focus is on our customers.
Let me ask Jim Faycolt here in studio with Potomac Edison the same question. Why not just bite the bullet, bury the power lines?
Well, I think, you know, Tom mentioned a couple key points. You know, the price to do that would be substantial. You know, it definitely will be discussed. There's been a lot of talk recently about it. You know, there are some other factors. I mean, clearly it would help during a storm like we had. But, you know, burying lines underground introduces other, you know, challenges. I mean, other outages, you know, there's other causes from underground cable outages. So although you'd save on the one side, you know, you do introduce some concerns on the other side. You know, we've got over 5,400 miles of you know, wire, and you know, the estimates of cost vary widely, you know, from several hundred thousand to several million dollars a mile.
But a comparison can be DC Water right now has an antiquated underground sewer system that they are in a multi-billion, 20-year project just began. They're going to dig up roads, tunnel, to replace the system because they knew they just had to do it. They were forced to do it by a court order, but they're going ahead and doing it. Rates are going up, and there's not rioting in the street. People are paying their bills. It's getting done. They're doing it. Why not the power companies, which I would think people would argue has a far greater impact when the power goes out rather than when the sewer overflow dumps sewage into the Potomac River?
No, I understand, Mark. It's a good point, and that's why I think, again, that discussion will be had by a lot of different parties over the next period of time. And, you know, Tom mentioned something. I mean, there has been quite a few studies. I know there was one done in Maryland back in about 2000, pretty extensive. Working groups, a consultant came in. So I think there's been a lot of work already done looking at it. I know there will be some more discussions going forward, and we'll come to a conclusion on that.
Rodney Blevin with Dominion Power. How about just starting with the feeders and burying the feeders first? Is that an option?
Well, Mark, three things on the subject of underground. First of all, we're hearing this from our customers as well, and I want to make sure they know that we are hearing them and we have some work to do there. On the cost piece, the numbers in Virginia were $83 billion and $3,000 per year per customer in rates. So,
whose numbers are those?
State Corporation Commission did a study in 2005 following Hurricane Isabel. So cost is a major factor in the decision to place more lines underground, particularly in an economy where customers are struggling to pay the bills they have now. Now, it's more complicated than just cost in terms of which lines go underground. For example, we have 60% of our lines in Northern Virginia are already underground, and in many cases, we need permission from every landowner to place additional facilities underground.
Well, let me ask you then about the 60% that are underground. Does that pose a problem? Do you have a problem then repairing or finding outages, or how is that system working for you?
You know, it has its own set of challenges, Mark. It's not. It is. It's it's not without its own flaws. But our customers are telling us that they want us to look at putting more lines underground, and we're listening. It's a complicated subject, and we're going to look at it very closely.
More with the power utility executives after a look at traffic and weather.
The aftermath of the 2012 derecho. It's a special edition of Ask the Utility Execs on WTOP. Now back to your hosts, Mark Seagraves and Mark Lewis.
And we'll be getting back to your phone calls as well at 877-336-1035, 877-336-1035. Tweet us a question on Twitter. Use the hashtag WTOP Talkback. Mark?
And we did get a lot of calls, emails, and Facebook in advance of this. And here's, and not all of them were people who were upset. And here's Henry, who represents a not a large majority, but a segment of your customers. Go ahead, Henry.
I have nothing but congratulations to all those Pepco employees that went over the top trying to deal with this latest fiasco with the weather and the downed trees. They exceeded my highest expectations.
So let me, I want to ask a yes or no question, a quick question, a kind of rapid fire round while I'll go through all of our executives here. We'll start in studio. But the question is to all of you, do you guys have backup generators at your home in case the electric goes out? Jim Falcolt with Potomac Edison.
I do not.
You do not. How about Tom Dennison and SMETCO?
I do not.
Robert Gould and BGE at your home?
I do. I have two.
You have two at your home?
I have two portable generators at my home, and I've already equipped my house to be equipped if I need to hook those up.
Rodney Blevin at Dominion?
No, I do not.
How about Tom Graham at Pepco?
I do, but I don't go home.
I'm guessing because you're working.
Say that too. I don't go home either.
Stan Furberg at Novak?
No, I do not, and there's a simple reason why. I happen to live next to a substation, and most people don't like to live close to substations, but it really helps the reliability.
There's an upside to that. How about Dave Kugler at Rappahannock?
No, I do not.
You don't. Let me ask you all about one of the things that people have been complaining about is that their power went on, went off, went on, went off, and some of them restocked their freezers, and a lot of people suffered some losses, some financial losses. And I'll start with Jim Falcolt here in the studio with Potomac Edison. Can people recover any of the monetary losses they suffered, whether they were in hotel rooms, whether their refrigerator failed because of a power surge, or they just had to throw out $500 worth of frozen meat?
You know, once again, Mark, a tough question because, you know, I know that has happened, and you know, it's part of the inconvenience that these cause. You know, people can talk to their local insurance carrier to see if they're covered under a situation.
Well, what about through you guys? Is there any instance where you would reimburse?
Not under a natural disaster situation like this.
Tom Dennison at SMETCO?
Same thing, and I think the inconvenience is great. I mean, I've certainly talked to people and talked to customers about that, and I know that the claim process with insurance companies happens and it goes forward. But I think from our perspective, what we do is we really try to get the most customers on and give people realistic ETRs, or estimated time of restoration. And I think that's what we provided in this last storm. We came together on Saturday and said, customers, 90% of you or more will be back on Monday night. We'll have everybody back on by the 4th of July. And that gave people some expectations. That gave people some planning to do to make alternative arrangements for storing their groceries and those types of things.
Stan Furberg at Novak, what about the idea of power companies when they know there's going to be a sustained outage of going out and offering dry ice, having crews just deliver any kind of accommodations that they can to people to help them get through what could be a really trying time?
Well, Mark, we've done that in the past. In the case of this storm, I don't think there was enough advanced warning that those kind of arrangements could have been made well in advance. It's somewhat different when you know a hurricane is coming 3 or 4 days in advance, but this one came on us pretty quickly.
And Tom Graham at Pepco, a lot of people are concerned about proposed rate increases in Maryland and D.C. You know, coming on the heels of this, a lot of people, we've had a lot of emails of people just saying, you know, how can you ask for a rate increase, you know, when we just spent a week without power?
Yeah, again, thank you for the question. Yeah, that process started about a year ago when we requested a rate adjustment. And it's really for expenditures that we have already made to improve service reliability for our customers. Part of that has to do with the reliability enhancement plan that I mentioned a couple times, and then also through the implementation of AMI. So these are expenditures that we've already made to the benefit of our customers.
And are any of the others of you seeking rate increases right now?
Not at this point.
Not at this point. Let me ask you about in the future, and I know that, let me talk to you, Mr. Graham, about this. A lot of people complain that, and even public officials, they just didn't know what to do when their power was out, whether they needed to call. And it turned out that Pepco, unlike some of the other utilities, wanted their customers to continue to call back and update them on their status. And people thought, well, once I called once, that's it. I'm in the queue. I don't have to call again. What can you do about educating people in the future as to what they should be doing during a power outage to ensure that they're in the queue to get restored?
You know, a couple things. I respond to that is, you know, every day during a major event, and, you know, I would say starting on Saturday with this particular one, we conduct a call with our government officials. And I recall that first call was about 2 hours, and anywhere from, you know, 70 to 80 officials participate on those calls. And at that time, we define expectations, we provide all information that we have on the event, and describe our next steps. Now, again, the most effective way for customers to assist us in this process is to report those outages through 1-877-PEPCO-62. And if they do receive, and they can also track that through the app, they can track it through the website, and if they do receive a call indicating that we're working in their area and they do not have power today, you know, unfortunately, you know, the best thing that we have is calling back into the company to report those outages. So we do encourage them during the course of the week to continue to call that number.
Tom Graham with Pepco, Rodney Blevin with Dominion Power, Robert Gould with BGE, Stan Furberg with Novec, Dave Kugler with Rappahannock, Jim Falkholt with Potomac Edison, and Tom Dennison with SMECO. We appreciate all of you taking time to come in here, and Mark Lewis for manning all these massive phone lines that were coming in. We appreciate everybody's participation in the show today, and good luck in the future.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
Thank you.